We know that there's the haves and the have-nots. There's those farms that went into the SFI that are earning money for delivering for the environment, and there's those that have nothing. But again, so much of this comes around the clarity of the budget. How much headroom is there? What scope is there for a new scheme? And when is it going to be available for farm? Those answers have got to come from DEFRA. But then you add in the complexity of the countryside stewardship rollover and those the cliff edge for those 5,800 agreements. It's a messy picture, and DEFRA need to bring clarity urgently so we can rebuild some confidence.
Farm leader Tom Bradshaw vents his frustration at further delays to the government's flagship agri-environment scheme. Farmers protest outside the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. Blue tongue is confirmed in Wales and milk markets take a tumble. And we join the great and good to celebrate the best of British agriculture at the Farmers Weekly Awards in London. Welcome to the Farmers Weekly podcast. I'm Johan Tasker.
I'm Louise Impey.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
More on all that and more from NFU President Tom Bradshaw later. But first, a top story. Farmers across England face further significant cash flow shortfalls. It's because the government's flagship agri-environment scheme, the Sustainable Farming Incentive, is unlikely to reopen before late spring 2026. Farmers Weekly understands April is the earliest the scheme could reopen because of budgetary constraints and IT issues. Well, joining us to discuss exactly what's going on is Farmers Weekly Deputy Editor Abby Kay. Abby, been a while since you've been on the podcast. Welcome back. You've been off on maternity leave.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not really sure why it's called maternity leave, because it doesn't feel anything like annual leave. I've been pretty busy, to say the least, but happy to be back now.
Well, good to have you back and good to know that everything's going well.
Yeah, everything's going really well, thank you. Very much enjoying motherhood. First couple of weeks were a bit touch and go, but we're settled in now.
Well, that's really good to know. And thanks for sharing your good news with us all, Abby. Not so much good news, though, on the Sustainable Farming Incentive. This delay next April at the earliest, that's going to have a huge impact on farms right across England.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. You know, we've got farmers who are budgeting around a transition plan where area payments were phasing out slowly, and now they're being hit with this additional disruption to payments that are supposed to be coming from the SFI. And it's just really difficult for anyone who's running a business to try and plan, to have any clarity or any certainty about what the future holds.
And what are people telling you? I mean, it's obviously not good news.
I think I would say unhappy. You know, once again, it seems like farmers are paying the price for almost government incompetence. You know, we've been promised this certainty after several tumultuous years of Brexit, and we just don't seem to be getting that. I mean, I was speaking to one person who said, you know, we're almost 10 years on from the referendum now, and we're still not in a settled place on policy. Farmers still can't rely on the government and the fact that they're saying they're going to get these payments at a certain time for a certain amount. It's just everything seems to be up in the air again.
Late spring for the new scheme to go live is an estimate, an unofficial estimate, of course. It could change. Could it be brought forward, or indeed could it face further delays?
Multiple people have said to me that they've been told on several occasions that this financial year's budget is spent. It's already been spent. So you're looking at April will be the absolute earliest by which this scheme would open. But even then, that seems to be quite an optimistic reading of the situation. You know, we've not only got the fact that the budget has been spent, we've also got the fact that there are IT issues. So the old IT software, City Agri, that used to administer the Common Agricultural Policy, that the wheels have basically fallen off it. They can't renew a contract to patch it up any further. So they're having to design a whole new system for the IT. So that means when the scheme does open, it's going to be on this brand new IT system. It's going to need a controlled rollout, which is going to mean the amount of money that can get out of the door in the next financial year is going to be more limited. And then, of course, we've got ministerial changes as well at DEFRA. So people having to get up to date. So there's a lot of things that are feeding into it. So April earliest, but I'm hearing that's an optimistic reading of the situation.
And a new IT system adding to the challenges. Abby, government and the introduction of IT systems, they don't really have a good track record, do they?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I can't really think of any government IT system that has gone off without a hitch, to be honest. So it's not something that I'm overly optimistic about, but you have to maintain some positivity, don't you, and hope that this isn't going to cause too many problems, the rollout's going to go smoothly, and that all will be well.
Hope for the best and prepare for the worst, I guess. But we never got the much promised update on the sustainable farming incentive that we were promised this summer either, did we?
Again, what I'm hearing is that because of the fact that there has been a change of DEFRA secretary, there's been a change of farming minister, it's not going to be until around Christmas time that we're getting any announcements, because it's going to take that long to make sure they're up to speed, that they're briefed. Does that potentially mean even rolling into Oxford Farming Conference in January? You know, they like to have a set piece announcement to make at the Oxford Farming Conference. But it's not only ministers, is it, Johan? Because we've also lost the two people who were the driving force behind the changes to the farming programme. So we've lost Janet Hughes, we've lost Jonathan Baker. So it's changes at the front and changes at the back as well. There's a lot going on at DEFRA at the moment.
Yeah, Jonathan Baker and Janet Hughes, of course, two key civil servants at DEFRA, very, very much involved in the architecture and design of the sustainable farming incentive and its implementation. Abby, where does this leave the government's sort of repeated statements that it's backing British farmers, it's supporting the industry, and that food security is national security? Are we to take them seriously?
To be honest, I feel as though those statements that the government's been making, that the Prime Minister has even made, a lot of farmers are going to look at that and think, quite frankly, it's a bit of a joke. I mean, they're in a position now, again, where they're waiting to even find what's going to be on offer for them over the coming year. And the government doesn't really seem to be doing anything else anywhere else to suggest that these statements are being backed up with solid delivery. I mean, we're still waiting for the profitability review that Minette Batters is doing. I think a lot's going to hinge on that and what she says there. But I hope they're not expecting that farmers are just going to be able to forget about the environment and boost their profitability instantly, and as though these schemes are almost going to be unnecessary, because that would be a dangerous place to be.
And what's DEFRA said about all of this, Abby?
Surprisingly little. So I got a response to the story in just as we started speaking, Johan, and was having a glance over it. Not saying much, just reiterating the fact that, again, they are backing farmers with the largest investment in nature-friendly farming in history. Well, that's not true if you take into account inflation. They want to get more British food on our plates. Well, the British food procurement promise, that's fallen flat, hasn't it? I think the Countryside Alliance did a survey and found that basically government departments aren't doing anything more now to source British produce than they were before and help restore nature. Well, this is a flagship scheme to help restore nature. And where is that? We don't have any clarity on it. They have also said they inherited farming schemes that were untargeted and underspent, but there are now more than half of farmers in our schemes, meaning money is getting into their pockets, and that they will set out further updates on the reformed sustainable farming incentive in due course. So there you have it.
Abby Kay, Farmers Weekly Deputy Editor, thank you very much. Hugh, Louise, the sustainable farming incentive, the gift that keeps on giving, but not in a good way.
Well, it's not giving us very much, is it, at the moment? Yeah, look, this is a delay. The awful thing, Johan, is that I don't think people will be very surprised by this, even though we really do need to know what it's going to look like. And as we've said on many occasions, farming is a long-term game. The environment isn't going to wait for this government to sort themselves out and get it right. For me, I think there is one crucial thing missing as we think about the SFI. This government has never told us what the vision is. You know, we did know that before with the last government. We knew about public money for public goods. We've never really had that from the new government, what they really want from farming. And quite difficult there for the civil servants to design this new version, whatever that's going to look like, of the SFI, without that sort of basic vision behind it.
And those civil servants, well, we've lost, as Abby was saying, two key civil servants in the design of the sustainable farming incentive, Hugh, and we've also got a new ministerial team too.
Yeah, but I think the civil service personnel are, with the greatest respect, irrelevant. They should be able to deliver whatever project in whatever department. And in some ways, we've probably fawned too much about, oh, look, they understand farming. I mean, I'm assuming people in the nuclear reprocessing industry go, oh, they understand isotopes. I've no idea. But you know what? The reason we pay tax is so they deliver the policy. And ultimately, it's down to the government to deliver the policy. And as usual, the whole thing's just at sixes and sevens. I mean, probably the biggest problem is that DEFRA is never seen as a great priority. We know that. I mean, this psychodrama continues, Johan. It's like Groundhog Day. Louise is absolutely right about the long-term vision. We're meant to have this 25-year farming plan. When was that? I mean, the last ministerial team, Daniel Zeichner et al., were supposed to be running that in the... Well, it was meant to be appearing about now. So whether Dame Angela... and Emma R. have looked that one up. I have no idea, but it would be useful to have a plan going forward. And it's just the same old thing, isn't it? Look, do you know what comes to life is mind is the Spice Girls song. I think it was their first hit. It's "Tell Me What You Want, What You Really, Really Want" was the lyric. That's what this is. And it's just like hopeless. I'm a Dutch guy this week. And we were sat down talking about stuff, and he was really keen to know about Brexit. And I said to him, I said, look, the one thing is, you know, yeah, we've got control of our rural policy. I said, but the very time we have control of our rural policy, which you'd think would be a bonus because we're not tied up into a massive CAP oil tanker, CAP oil tanker, and we're in a little fishing vessel supposedly being agile and skirting around and doing what we could do. We're not. We're in our own oil tanker that isn't moving. And worse still, the budget is constricting, and it's likely to. That's the reality of it. And this BS about, oh, more money than ever, absolute, utter BS. We know that it was 2.3 million in 2016, 2.2 million. And if you index link that, if you take into account inflation, it's like 40, 50% less than it was 9 years ago. So it's just, the mess continues. Don't budget for any support. What comes along, it's like the generation game conveyor belt. What comes along, grab it while you can, but budget for nothing and move forward. And the worst case scenario is, and this is the proper psychodrama, is we have this zero support environment where nothing's happening. We've got competitors in devolves who effectively are competitors, with the greatest respect, in Wales and Scotland, the Northern Ireland, who are getting support. And then the worst thing we've then got going on in England when we've got no support is that the regulation starts to creep in and it pushes and pushes and pushes. But in the meantime, from a fiscal point of view, running farm businesses, you can't budget on anything.
Louise, Hugh's cultural references there, about 30 years out of date, the Spice Girls generation game. I know some of us can remember such things, but maybe some of our younger listeners can't. Not just the policy.
Look it up on YouTube.
Not just the policy, though, Louise. Also this IT situation, this IT system at the Rural Payments Agency. I mean, that's probably 30 years out of date as well.
Well, this is another thing, isn't it, where we're going back to the future, I think. Haven't the RPA always had IT issues, or that's always been what we've been told? So, I mean, that's really, really disappointing, isn't it? You would think that they would know with a new system, they needed to get the IT sorted out first. But anyway, I mean, back on the SFI, I was actually with a group of farmers this week and talking about the generation game. The lady hosting us is a fairly new to farming, and we were looking and discussing, you know, looking around the farm, discussing the very diverse rotation. And what was quite interesting, actually, is that she then said, well, you know, if the SFI ends or stops, we will just have to grow more wheat. And I thought that was quite interesting. So they've really worked. She's really worked her farming system around it to get full environmental benefit. So, but already she's thinking, you know, without that support, without that de-risking option, I'm going to have to change what I'm doing. And that's a real pity.
Yeah, Louise, I mean, it's absolutely what we saw, like with the CS, countryside stewardship stuff falling off a cliff this January. It is, you know, you've got to farm the heck out of it, basically, if the support is not going to be there. And as for IT, I think we just, you know, look at the LI, look at the livestock, whatever it's called, traceability system. 10 years, an X 100 million later, and they're still just about scratching their backside about to launch it. And it's just, yeah, it's woeful, really. And we knew that the IT thing was needing redone. Dear Janet Hughes was saying it needed doing 5-6 years ago because of the complexity of SFI. So there are no great surprises there. But like I say, budget on nothing and take everything as a bonus.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And now a special word with this week's podcast partner, NFU Mutual, and I'm joined by NFU Mutual's Rosie Monk. Rosie, NFU Mutual, not just about insurance, you offer a range of services to farmers.
Yeah, so NFU Mutual offers a wide range of products and services. Our local NFU Mutual agents work closely with farmers and really understand the day-to-day challenges you face. And because they're both based in your community, they're always nearby to offer friendly personal support. The NFU Mutual team do more than just help farmers insure rural properties, vehicles and livestock. We also have expert financial advisors across the UK who are well-versed in the needs of farming businesses, and they're able to support with things like inheritance tax planning and making the most of available reliefs. They can advise on a wide range of NFU Mutual products and others we offer from specialist providers. And they'll take time to explain the services we offer and the charges so that everything's clear from the start. And finally, when it comes to health and safety, we've got NFU Mutual Risk Management Services with specialist consultants who will go out and visit farms to offer practical advice and support.
There's lots of different insurance companies out there, but what makes NFU Mutual different to other insurers?
Yeah, so there's a lot that makes NFU Mutual stand out from other insurers. For starters, our heritage. We were founded by farmers for farmers, and we've been supporting the industry for over 115 years now. So that means we really get farming and the challenges that come with it. We keep things simple and transparent, so there's no admin fees for making changes to your policy and no extra charges for paying monthly by direct debit. We also work closely with farming unions to make sure farmers' interests are front and center when it comes to industry development. And we also offer mutual bonus, rewarding loyalty and giving customers a saving on the renewal premium of their general insurance policies. But it's not all about the products and services we offer. Beyond insurance, we're committed to supporting the farming community through initiatives that reflect your values and protect your way of life, from educating young farmers and promoting farm safety to tackling rural poverty. We're proud to play a part. In 2024 alone, we donated £3.25 million to causes across the UK and invested over £440,000 to help fight rural crime and support local communities.
So a strong pedigree then, lots of heritage. How are you adapting at NFU Mutual to support farmers in the modern day?
We're always looking ahead at NFU Mutual to make sure our cover keeps up with the way farming is evolving. That means ensuring new tech like automated machinery and developing innovative products like parametric insurance that is triggered by weather events, not just claims. We're also exploring how we can develop offerings to support natural capital projects so farmers can make the most of opportunities in this growing area.
And Rosie, how can farmers get hold of NFU Mutual?
NFU Mutual have over 280 local agency offices across the UK, which means we are always close by. Whether you want to give them a call, send them an email or pop in for a chat, your local office is there ready to help you. You can easily find their contact details by heading to nfumutual.co.uk.
Rosie Monk from NFU Mutual, this week's Farmers Weekly podcast partner. Thank you very much.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, farmers descended on the Labour Party conference this week to protest against a raft of government policies affecting farming livelihoods. Farmers Weekly's Phil Case joined protesters outside the conference centre.
Thank you, everybody, for being here today. It's an absolutely inspiring to see people from England, Wales, Scotland and Ireland stand together as one voice for farming and for fairness. My family only owns 65 acres, the rest we rent, and yet we are even on the cusp of paying inheritance tax.
My name's Kathleen Renner, and I'm a mother and a farmer from East Sussex. I'm here today for my 12-year-old son. He's a seventh-generation farmer who deserves the chance to carry on our family tradition without being crushed with debt and destructive policies. When a farm is lost, Britain loses its skill, its heritage, and its ability to feed itself. That means one thing: no farms, no food, no future.
None of us have got the money to pay this IHT bill. Mine's going to be about 40 grand a year by rough maths, on a farm that made a profit a couple of years ago of 12 and a half grand. Invariably have to sell half the farm to pay the bill.
Just some of the speakers there at the protest organised by the pressure group Farmers to Action. Inside the conference centre, DEFRA Secretary Emma Reynolds insisted the government was supporting farmers.
And a healthy environment isn't just about clean water. It's about the land that sustains us and the people who work it. And I want to speak directly to British farmers. I want you to know I've seen firsthand how hard you work and how much we depend on you, putting food on the nation's plate, changing the way the land is farmed to protect the environment for the next generation. And just as the rest of the economy is transforming and modernising, so is farming, marrying this country's rich traditions with cutting-edge business practices. Farming is essential to economic growth and prosperity. Supporting sustainable farming means food security, rural jobs, and leading the world in agricultural innovation. We are already making progress, and we have secured the biggest budget for sustainable farming and nature recovery in this country's history. And there is much more to do. We will bring forward the farming roadmap and the land use framework to pave the way towards a profitable and healthy farming future.
That's DEFRA Secretary Emma Reynolds addressing the Labour Party conference. Well, Emma Reynolds also addressed an NFU fringe meeting at the conference, and afterwards, Farmers Weekly's Phil Case caught up with NFU President Tom Bradshaw.
Tom, this morning, Emma Reynolds, the new DEFRA Secretary, spoke at the NFU breakfast briefing here in Liverpool. There was one omission in her speech, and that was the family farm tax. She has yet to address this issue in either of her two speeches to the NFU.
Look, Emma hasn't talked about it publicly. In the first meeting I had with Emma, we did talk about it. Clearly, I raised it again in that session there. We know to rebuild the confidence of the industry, to stand a chance of the government rebuilding that relationship with the farming sector, they've got to look at their current proposals around inheritance tax. It's not affordable, it's not fair, and it's cutting off investment, and there's that group of farms that are caught in the eye of the storm. So we continue the campaign. We're working very closely with a lot of rural backbench Labour MPs. That is the route to get change. And once again, the message is the same. If you want to do anything, please write to your MP and make sure they know that this issue is still a live concern for you and your farm and your family.
There are some 6,000 or so countryside stewardship schemes that are ending with no home. What's the update?
Well, obviously, a lot of those schemes, those farmers have been providing for the environment for 20 plus years. It's unacceptable that there's nothing for them to transition into. Very often, they weren't able to access the SFI because it wasn't compatible with the schemes they already had on farm. So they've had no ability to get into the SFI. We are clearly calling for a rollover for 1 year for those schemes so they can continue to be rewarded for delivering for the environment. The environment benefits, farms benefits, and there isn't, you know, the government avoided a disastrous headline, which is Labour walk away from the environment. So I think it can win all ways round. Clearly that will take headroom out of the budget, which is currently available. And what we've just heard from Secretary of State Emma Reynolds there is about needing clarity for the future, certainty so that we can begin to invest. And around the schemes that are going to be on offer, the SFI, the Countryside Stewardship, we need clarity around that budget as well and how much headroom there is so that we can begin to plan for the future.
And you mentioned the SFI. DEFRA had said all along that they were going to provide an update at the end of summer. We're now into early autumn. There's nothing.
And it's incredibly concerning that there are no active schemes available. Unless you're one of those that's been invited to move into the countryside stewardships here, those 1,200 people, you can't access any schemes at the moment. We know that there's the haves and the have-nots. There's those farms that went into the SFI that are earning money for delivering for the environment. And there's those that have nothing, with the BPS being wound down to virtually actually zero next year. And but again, so much of this comes around the clarity of the budget. How much headroom is there? What scope is there for a new scheme? And when is it going to be available for farm? Those answers have got to come from DEFRA. But then you add in the complexity of the countryside stewardship rollover and those the cliff edge for those 5,800 agreements. It's a messy picture, and DEFRA need to bring clarity urgently so we can rebuild some confidence.
That's NFU President Tom Bradshaw talking to Farmers Weekly's Phil Case, who joins us now. Phil, you are at Liverpool, you're at the conference, at the protest. DEFRA Secretary Emma Reynolds not really giving anything away at all in her speech to conference. Was she any more forthcoming when she addressed the NFU fringe meeting?
Well, what was, I suppose, conspicuous about Ms. Reynolds' speech was that there really were no new announcements. I mean, usually when a minister comes to a conference, they usually caveat it with something for farmers. There's some sort of good news that they bring, but sadly not on this occasion. I think that the minister is obviously, she's still new to her role and she's trying to, she's barely got her feet under the table. She did say that she wanted a reset with farmers, that Labour is looking for this reset moment with farmers. That's an acknowledgement that, frankly, all is not well. And she also spoke about wanting to bring farmers more certainty. She said that this was the biggest concern that farmers that she had spoken to since she was appointed. Had been telling her basically, but I think that farmers were really expecting some sort of update on the sustainable farming incentive, when it was going to open, or when it's going to reopen. They were also expecting an update on the countryside stewardship. I mean, there's some 5,800 farmers that have agreements ending, and there's nowhere for them to go. But sadly, there was nothing there. And finally, If we're hoping for some update on the inheritance tax position from the government and what have you on this, there was nothing coming at all.
And Tom Bradshaw, Phil, continuing to call for clarity from the government, from Emma Reynolds.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose what was quite stark during the NFU fringe meeting was that although the minister didn't mention inheritance tax at all, it was one of the first things which came out of Tom Bradshaw's lips. And he turned towards the minister and said that, pointedly, we need a rethink here. And the minister was standing with her arms crossed, and she was clearly listening to everything he was saying and taking on board, and they were looking each other in the eyes. But I spoke to Tom afterwards, and he said, although there is no update on this, conversations are still taking place behind closed doors. But it's still a logjam, if we're honest, and it is a litmus test for Labour, really, if they do really want to support farmers or if they are hell-bent on introducing this highly controversial policy.
Farmers Weekly's Phil Case, thank you very much.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast. The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You're listening to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. Welcome along wherever you're listening to us from. You can email us podcast@fwi.co.uk. And if you're in the UK itself, you can also message us by texting the word farm, followed by your message to 88440. An email this week from Guy McNaughton, podcast listener, who says, I listened to the podcast the other week and you referred to lazy landlords when it comes to tenant farming. And I wonder what evidence the speaker has that there are lazy landlords. Hugh, I think this might have been you.
Well, my point is there are some landlords that deliver very little in terms of investment or help or support or future plan. And there are some landlords which deliver huge amounts of investment, support, future plan. So that's the difference, isn't there? We know there are plenty of landlords that just own the land and do very little other than pay an agent to administer it for them and take the rent. And then there are other landlords that get very involved, that help the tenants, that support the tenants, that plan with the tenants, that invest with the tenants. That's the difference, isn't it?
Louise, not all landlords are lazy.
Well, they definitely aren't. And the reason that I say that is that I went to the Farm Carbon Toolkit annual field day this week. And at that, they announced the winners of the Carbon Farmer of the Year competition that they run. And the winner and one of the runners-up, actually, they were both duchy tenants. And you could hear and see what how much landlord is involved and supporting them in their businesses. So the winner were Stuart and Helen Rogers, who farm in Dorset. They're a really high productive dairy farm, but with very low inputs and have done a lot to reduce emissions. And the runner-up on that occasion were Malcolm and Catherine Barrett, who farm down in Cornwall. And what's interesting, I think, about them is that they moved farm down there just 5 years ago, and they have made massive progress in that time. So again, supportive landlord and, you know, two people doing really, really well.
Landlord and tenants then, working together in perfect harmony. Hugh, while Louise was at the Carbon Farmer of the Year Awards, you've been having a busy week at home.
A busy week at home, but I went to a funeral on, when was the funeral? The funeral was on Tuesday afternoon, and it was of a dear, I don't think any farming got done in Surrey on Tuesday afternoon, because like the whole county was there. It was an amazing turnout for Eric, and Eric farmed, he was a contractor, Eric Milam, he was a real character, and he just makes you think that there are so many people like dear Eric. He was in his 70s, he died a few weeks ago, and he just never stopped farming his whole life. And I was stood there thinking, there are so many people like Eric that if they didn't do what they did in terms of effectively devoting their whole life to farming, sitting on a tractor, you wouldn't get half of what you need to get done. So yeah, it was a sad day, but also it was a joyous day and a celebration of Eric's life and all he achieved. And the numbers of people that he interacted with, like so many of these sort of characters, they are so precious in terms of what they do for us as an industry, and they are so integral in terms of what they do for us as an industry. So yeah, thank you, Eric, and all the other people like Eric, because without you, we wouldn't be able to do what we do.
Yeah, farming coming together and everybody relying on one another. Tough times, though, in Wales. Blue Tongue, Hugh.
Yeah, they got that to deal with, and they've also set up the Welsh government set up an exclusion zone in the temporary control zone in the sort of southeast of Wales, Chepstow, down to the border, down to the Severn Bridge, which is going to cause all sorts of fun and games for the poor producers caught up in that. Yes, it's the Welsh government doing their devolved government thing. I don't know. Lots of people are questioning their policy, and were questioning the policy earlier this year around movements into and out of Wales and the disruption that caused with their with the sheep industry and to a certain degree with cattle movements as well. And now they've put this in place. That's going to cause some issues. Some would argue you're trying to slow it. You know, all you're actually doing is causing pain when there's perfectly viable vaccines now available that work really well. And there's no shortage of supply of vaccine. I'm not a vaccine salesman, I should say, but actually there's plenty of it out there and it can be used. And you just think, well, why didn't they just get on and get that deployed earlier on instead of now causing a whole load of pain and anguish for all those farmers caught up in that temporary control zone and the other restrictions that go with it? Because at some point it'll finally crop up in Aberystwyth. And then it'll say, well, we've got there now, so there's not really much we can do. But yeah, so not helpful, but it is what it is. It's moving slowly. Quite a few cases popped up down in the southwest as well, and we also got a case of blue tongue 8. And talking about back to the future, we mentioned it earlier, back to 2007-8, there's now a case of blue tongue 8 cropped up on a farm in Cornwall. So Lord only knows where that's come from, but at least there's a vaccine on the shelf for it.
Yeah, blue tongue vaccine on the shelf. It does cost, of course, but could you afford not to use it? No such vaccine, though, for low milk prices, Hugh. The dairy markets this week certainly taking a tumble.
Yeah, we've seen the sort of global milk solids prices and cream prices, and everything started to slip. It started to slip a few weeks ago. And then interestingly, some of the UK processors actually put the price up a few months ago. But we've seen, in some cases, Freshways have dropped 6p this week, which, you know, and a lot of their producers are at the smaller end in terms of size. Not all, but quite a few are. And whatever size you are, that is a big drop, 6p to drop down. Other processors, possibly ones with a more diverse outlets for their products, doing more processing, You know, they've still dropped. They've still dropped, but not 6p, 1.5, 1.6, 2p, something like that. So yes, there is at the moment an interesting scenario going on in the dairy industry. The other thing is, I mean, we heard it the other week when we were talking about the dairy day. You know, we had the drought, with perfect turnout spring. Then because of the drought, and people then had to buffer feed so many cows because there's just no grass to graze, actually, they produce more milk, and the line of production is more akin to, if you like, house the whole of the UK dairy herd. So it's a really weird scenario. And it's just, yeah, it's another pressure, isn't it, at a time when farmers are going into this winter scratching around for forage. There is not much forage available in many parts of the country. In some parts there are, but in many parts there are not. So yeah, this is a real big pressure for a lot of those dairy businesses.
That's pressure on milk prices in the dairy markets then. Hugh, the rest of this week's commodity prices, in association with the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, what's happening?
Thank you very much, Johan. The finished steer deadweight this week stands on 641.5. Live weight's actually gone up nearly 11p, 365.9. Sheep rings this week, 682.5 is the SQQ on the deadweight. That's gone up 12p on the week. The live weight goes back 4p, 306.6. Pig price this week's dropped back 206.2. And the arable market, once again, yeah, not great. 162.7 is feed wheat. So that's basically gone up a massive 30p on the spot for this week. Milling wheat, 171.10. That's dropped back £8 or 7 to £8 on the week, almost £8. Feed barley goes up just under a pound. It's gone up about 80p, £145.20 this week. Oilseed rape, 398.80. It's dropped back almost a pound. Feed peas, 210.80. That drops back £13. Feed beans are £211. That's dropped back almost £3. Diesel price this week goes back 0.1 of a penny. This week, red diesel should cost you around 68.5 pence per litre.
Hugh, thank you very much. And for trusted market data and commodity prices delivered straight to your inbox, visit the AHDB Preference Centre at ahdb.org.uk.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast. The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And finally, it wouldn't be the start of autumn without the annual Farmers Weekly Awards. A good time was had by all at the Grosvenor House Hotel in London, where the great and good of UK agriculture gathered to celebrate all that's best in the industry. Hugh, Louise and I went along and joined the celebrations.
On behalf of the team at AgriVista, it gives me great pleasure to announce that the winner of the Farmers Weekly Awards 2025 Farmer of the Year is Ashley Jones.
Yes, taking the 2025 Farmer of the Year trophy, it is Ashley Jones.
And Cornish farmer Ashley Jones, as you've just heard there, winning not only the Mixed Farmer of the Year award, but also the overall Farmers Weekly Farmer of the Year 2025. Ashley, with us here now. Ashley, how does it feel to be a double winner this evening?
It's amazing. Really, really is amazing. To walk away with two awards, which I didn't really expect to get either, I am absolutely ecstatic. And yeah, I couldn't be happier.
And Ashley, you're a tenant farmer and your duchy, Cornwall tenant, how have they supported you?
You're right, I am a duchy tenant. Half my land is duchy, the other half is private landlord. Both are very proactive for next generation, youngsters getting into farming. So amazing, really, and I can't wait to share the news with them with the awards tonight, really.
A lot of farmers are quite cynical about awards because farmers just like to get on and do their own thing. But you've come here, you've applied for one, you've won two, you've walked out top man, and you're pretty much on show. But what would you say to fellow farmers, particularly young farmers, in terms of trying to promote what they're doing?
Don't hold back. Just do not hold back. The big issue in farming is we're not appreciated as an industry. But actually, we work all the hours God gives. We do our best, and just go out there, do your best. You are appreciated even if you're not told. Just do it.
Ashley Jones, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, every year, Farmers Weekly makes a special award, the Farming Champion of the Year Award, awarded by Farmers Weekly in partnership with the National Farmers Union. And this year, that award was awarded to Alistair Carmichael, MP, Orkney MP, and Chairman of the EFRA Select Committee, the House of Commons Select Committee for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, which acts as a watchdog, scrutinising the government's farming and rural policies and holding the government to account. And earlier, we caught up with Alistair Carmichael just after he'd received the Farming Champion of the Year Award 2025.
I'm absolutely astonished. Genuinely, I had no idea this was coming. And when I was on the stage, I said, the first thing I said to Tom is, thank God the plane left from Orkney this morning, or else you would have had a bit of a gap in your proceedings. And I mean, I'm absolutely blown away. Look, you know, quite honestly, I'm a farmer's son. I now manage my own farm. I've been an MP for 24 years. You don't live as an MP waiting for recognition or gratitude. If you do, you die a bitter and disappointed man. But there's nothing in the countryside unless you've got farming. And there's no farming unless your farming policy has at its heart food production. And that is absolutely where we now have to get back to, because it's been a long, slow journey, but we have come to a place where farming policy does an awful lot of good and worthwhile things, but it's not about producing food. And I think the message that a new Secretary of State and a new Permanent Secretary in DEFRA have got to understand is that actually the things that they want to do in terms of nature recovery, landscape recovery, climate mitigation, flood management, these things are all done best if you use the land to produce food. And that's why food production should not be an either-or when it comes to these environmental objectives. They are best delivered by using the land to produce food. And that, you know, that's why I'm passionate about it.
And important to celebrate the best of British agriculture despite all the challenges
faces. I think actually you've got an evening here tonight where everybody has scrubbed up pretty well. And at a time when there are no shortage of reasons to be despondent. You've got the family farm tax, you've got the double cab pickup, you've got fertiliser taxes coming down the road, you see livestock numbers as a whole still falling off a cliff. Yeah, there are lots of reasons to be despondent, but actually, you know what? This is still a great industry with a great future, because farmers want to keep doing what they do supremely well. And the one thing that Keir Starmer has been absolutely right about: food security is national security, and it's in the national interest that they should produce food.
That's Alistair Carmichael, MP, Chair of the EFRA Select Committee. Hugh, Louise, a packed house here tonight at the Grosvenor House Hotel. 1,200 people from across the UK celebrating the best of British agriculture.
Yeah, a real showstopper, isn't it? It's a fantastic event. You know, whatever people think about awards and recognition, it is high time that we give farmers the praise that they deserve. And what a great evening. Fantastic to see so many younger farmers picking up awards. They're really redefining what they do and what happens out there in the fields. So great evening, well done.
Lots of families on stage. We've had lots of tartan. Also, Hugh, saw lots of photos. They put photos of all of the finalists up on the big screen. Lots of farmers in shorts, and more than any other year that I've ever seen, probably a testament to the drought year that we've had.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show that we are absolutely at the coalface, not only of climate change, but of feeding our nation and other nations as well, because we export quite a lot. Yes, it is great to finally come together every year to celebrate the phenomenal achievements, the resilience of farmers across the UK. It's a resilience like no other sector, and don't let anyone fob you off, because when I speak to people in other sectors, it's like no other.
all great farmers, finalists and winners. Louise, some standout moments for you. Perhaps Louise, arable advisor John Sarup, and arable farmer of the year Richard Anthony.
Well, both of those absolutely fantastic and very deserving winners. I mean, John Sarup is so respected in the world of potatoes, and he really has worked very, very hard. Richard and Lynn Anthony, let's not forget Lynn. She's done a great job too. You know, they started again from scratch when the family partnership dissolved. They started again from scratch on a very, very small area of land. They have built that up in a very short time. So fantastic to see Richard win. He's working really hard with the Welsh Government to try and explain to them and tell them what farming involves. So really, really pleased for both of those winners.
Hugh, final thoughts from you? Ultimately,
it's just quite fantastic to see, like, celebrating the very best that's there. And all I can say, if you're the most cynical old git farmer out there, get yourself on an awards nomination for next year, get yourself here and celebrate what you're probably doing on your farm that you think is fantastic. Do you know what? It probably is, and you need to get out there, and we need to showcase just what a phenomenal industry we are in the UK and how we punch above our weight globally, even though we're so small in the general scheme of things.
Yeah, you've got to be in it to win it, as they say, Hugh, and always important to celebrate success. And a big thank you to all our winners and finalists for entering this year's Farmers Weekly Awards. From us all here at the Grosvenor House Hotel, we'll be back next week with all the latest news, views and analysis of all the big stories affecting UK agriculture. But for now, from me, Johan Tasker, and all the Farmers Weekly team, until next time, thank you for listening.